I'm fresh back from writing retreat. Not unusual. I do retreats 3 to 5 times per book. It's part of my process. I hide from my regular life and just draft. It's how I get that ugly, messy word clay I need to shape an actual book. But this retreat, it was different. I usually go with one or more members of my writing group. I beg, borrow, or, in desperate times, rent an off-season beach house or mountain cabin, and then we disappear into it for a week. I go with much-loved partners, in trios or little groups. We've retreated every place from the coast of California to the Hamptons to a host of mountains and beaches and little cities in between. We work, and believe me, we work, but for me, retreats are as much about renewing my most important friendships as they are about writing. This year, I happened to be off schedule with most of my writing peeps. Everyone just finished a project. The only person in my set with a similar deadline is Sarah, and she and I are set up for July, but that's just one retreat. I needed 3 more this year. So I decided to apply for retreat space at a nearby facility run by Piedmont College right here in Georgia. I was nervous about it, retreating alone. Still, they gave me the time, and off I went to the Lillian E. Smith Center. Do you know Lillian E. Smith? I did not. She was a Georgia writer and civil rights activist, most famous for Strange Fruit, a 1944 novel about an interracial love affair. She was white, southern, rural, upper class, female, and she was denouncing segregation openly and loudly as early as the 1930s. It made her a pioneer, but it did not make her very popular. This was the heyday of Jim Crow, when separate but equal was gospel, and Smith was calling segregation, quote, a spiritual lynching. Strange Fruit was a number one bestseller in the mid-1940s, even though it was banned in several large cities, northern cities too, Boston and Detroit. And for a while, because of the bans, it was illegal to send the book via the U.S. Postal Service. It was Eleanor Roosevelt who put a stop to that. The ban offended her, and she asked her husband to lift it, and he did. The center is Smith's own house and property, repurposed. It sits up on top of Screamer Mountain in the middle of the Chattahoochee National Forest, directly between 2 gorgeous state parks, Tallulah Gorge and Black Rock Forest. If you are a hiking person, and I am, and if you are a kinetic person who needs to move your body to get your brain to work, and I am, it's perfect. There are 3 little cabins up there, each a contained single room with a mini kitchen and a workspace and a bed, a bathroom. Mine actually belonged to one of Smith's sisters. She lived there. She moved there after she was widowed. And it still feels like someone's house. Hand-tatted antimacassars and a dear old tea kettle and a well-used rocker. Smith's own house is the common area, and it has a big modern sitting room with a fireplace and a big deck with the requisite glorious mountain view. Feels hotelish, but that's the only place that does. Even the rest of that building feels personal. The other half is a museum of Smith's belongings, and they aren't in cases. They're just there. Like her typewriter's right there. You can just touch it. I did. And my cabin was chock full of the family's personal books. When I arrived, it was too late in the afternoon to start work, so I was perusing the bookshelves that were there in every available spot. You can get to know a person by their bookshelves, you know? And this huge collection reflected Smith. Tons of nonfiction on social justice and psychology and theater, plus a truly excellent selection of novels. Every book I opened was inscribed. They'd been given to Smith by friends or her partner or her family members, or she had inscribed them herself for her sisters, all these loving personal little notes and dates and names inside the covers. I'd brought some books with me. I'd never travel without books. But I ended up forgetting about them and just rereading her copies of The Color Purple and The Sound and the Fury. I couldn't resist them. I wanted to turn those old, frail pages that so many other fingers had turned before me. I wanted that papery smell old, well-loved books get. You know that smell. This collection was so obviously passion-based. These were books that had lit someone up and demanded that they be shared, and I wanted to read into that experience. When I left for the retreat, I was worried I'd be too lonely, and I was very much on my own. I got up every day before 5 a.m., worked until the cool of the afternoon, and then I'd hit one of the state parks and do a trail. I'd come home, drink tea, eat dinner, go to bed by sunset. There was one other person working in the cabin next door, and we were friendly. One night we met for a glass of wine. We said hello most days. My only other human contact was with rangers who handed me maps, made sure I had water, and waved me off into the woods. But I wasn't lonely at all. I wasn't sad. I think it was the space. This cabin that had been so truly lived in, and lived in by people who love all the things that I love, who hoped all the things that I hope. It was oddly like basking in company, not just with the family, but with all the other people who had been granted this space for a time, this room of one's own, if you will. People in love with hope, with justice, in love with storytelling, with art. I'm not giving up future retreats with my posse, but I'll tell you this, my friends, I'm going back. For WABE, I'm Jocelyn Jackson.